Each Sunday of Advent and on Christmas Eve this year, we're taking a look at a different beloved Christmas carol. We're looking beyond their familiarity to find the message about why the birth of Jesus changes our lives and gives us life. Well, last week's focus was the mysterious Advent hymn, O Come, Emmanuel. Its text reminds us that we need a Savior to rescue us, to redeem us, to save us. From what? To save us from our instinctive desire to serve and satisfy our self-centered tendencies. We pray for Emmanuel, which is Hebrew for God with us. Well, this week, let's take a look at one of the loveliest carols in the Christmas tradition. It came upon the midnight clear. Its poetry was written by a Massachusetts village pastor named Edmund Hamilton Sears. Now, Sears was a member of the Unitarian movement, but unlike most Unitarians, he did believe in the divinity of Jesus. Now, his lyrics paint a vivid picture of the biblical story of shepherds and angels on that first Christmas night, with an unusual emphasis on the stillness of the world and the world's awareness of the angel's song. But the carol speaks of God's concern for our social condition, offering hope and help to what the carol calls the weary world laboring beneath life's crushing load. But to appreciate this carol's primary message, I want to remind us of a common aspect of religious architecture. I invite you to think of what follows as a holiday temple tour. During this summer's sabbatical, on our trip to the Indonesian island of Bali, Mary and I visited numerous Hindu temples. Many are historic, with some of the temples having foundation stones dating back over 2,000 years, even before the age of Hinduism. And these temples are still active, frequented not only by tourists, but by the Balinese, who offer ceremonial of sacrifices of fruit and flowers and rice. They offer them daily, whether at a large community temple or at a family's own modest shrine in their home. Well, one of the oldest, largest, and most important Hindu temple complexes in Bali is called the Baisakhi Temple Complex. Baisakhi consists of 23 temples on the slopes of Mount Agung, the largest volcano on the island of Bali, and it's still active, by the way. Its most recent eruption was 1 month before we got there. The temples and the terraces and the courtyards of the Baisakhi Temple Complex are built on a series of parallel ridges ascending the mountain. The temple buildings and the pavilions have been arranged along a central axis of many flights of steps that guide one straight toward the mountaintop. I can only guess at the number of steps we climbed as we walked from the bottom to the top. But 2,000 steps would not be an outlandish estimate. For the worshiper ascending all those steps to offer prayer and ceremonial sacrifice, the message is clear. The divine is on high, and we dwell down here. Another example, more familiar to you, I'm sure, would be found in Athens, Greece. Picture the majestic ruins of the stately marble Parthenon atop that rocky outcropping called the Acropolis, which literally translates the top of the city. The Parthenon was built about 500 years before the time of Jesus. And here's an interesting fact. By the time the Apostle Paul saw the Parthenon around the year 50 AD, wars and earthquakes had already reduced the Parthenon to the ruined state, much like we see it today. That's what Paul saw, too. The Parthenon was built as a temple to Athena, the namesake goddess of the city of Athens. Now, it wasn't coincidence that placed that temple there atop the Acropolis, 500 feet above sea level. That lofty location sent a very clear message to all who saw it. What? The divine is on high, and we dwell down here. Another example, the Jewish temple in Jerusalem, is one that you can't see because the Jerusalem temple was destroyed first in the year 587 BC, and then a few decades later it was rebuilt, but then once again destroyed in the year 70 AD. Hasn't been rebuilt since. But whenever you see a stock photo of Jerusalem today, like on the news or something like that, with that large limestone wall and the gold-plated dome of the rock glimmering in the sunlight, you're looking at the Temple Mount, the flat-topped Mount Moriah, where the Jerusalem temple once stood. King David first built an altar on Mount Moriah, and then later his son King Solomon erected the Jewish temple there. To approach the temple precincts from the nearby settlement known as the City of David, worshipers and pilgrims would have had to walk uphill, up rocky Mount Moriah, up to the massive 200-foot-wide steps that ascended to the arched entryways that passed through the boundary walls, and then these arched entryways led to more stairways that finally brought one up to the level of the temple grounds. The Temple Mount was the Parthenon of the Jews, says Israeli archaeologist Gabby Barkay, describing how worshipers would have climbed all those steps to get to the top. He says, you would feel every step of the climb in your limbs and in your lungs. And what's the message of that experience? God is on high and we are down here. Now, if that seems a little contrived, that architecture serves to illustrate the distance between God and humankind, let me ask you this. Why are there five steps leading from the level where you're sitting down there up to the communion table in the chancel area up here? The message, God is on high and we are down here. And by the way, it's not just religious architecture which signals that commoners are below, the powerful are above. Picture the U.S. Supreme Court building. Or the U.S. Capitol, with flight upon flight of steps leading from the ground level up to the entryway. You get the message. Everyday life is down here. Power and authority are up there. So with those images from architectural history in mind, let's revisit today's Christmas carol that describes angels bending near the earth to sing a song of peace and goodwill, acceptance, welcome. The Greek word angelos can be translated as angels or as messengers. Angels are messengers from on high. And everyone knows that on high is where God lives. But in Luke's story of the shepherds living in the fields, keeping night watch on their flocks, those divine messengers are bending near the earth with a singing telegram message from God. Peace on the earth, goodwill to all. That's God's hope for humankind. peace on earth, goodwill to all. That message is God's way of planting in our minds the desire, that aspiration, that goal. Through God's messengers, God bent near the earth to give us a blessing and a goal. But that wasn't all. From wherever God dwells in those highest heights beyond the infinite flight of stairs separating earth and heaven, from wherever God dwells far above us, God took the never-before-seen action. God chose to bend near the earth, to come down to earth and live and breathe and walk and work among us in human flesh. Jesus, born in Bethlehem. God came to earth in Jesus the Son so that we might see and listen and learn and find the ability to live in ways that bring peace on earth, goodwill to all. Following the way of Jesus, following the lead of Jesus, is our best chance of learning how to build and how to spread peace on earth, goodwill to all. So how do we follow His way? Here are just two possibilities, two. First, by reaching out to befriend those who are strangers to us. Oh, I know, we know the cautions about being wary of strangers. And yes, there are situations where you need to be wary of someone trying to take advantage of you. But there's also a lot of unwarranted suspicion and loneliness that easily could be dispelled if we simply were to reach out to one we don't know and try to make a connection. Jesus showed that in the story of the time when He visited the town of Jericho. You know the story. In that town lived a dishonest tax collector named Zacchaeus, who wanted so much to see this renowned traveling teacher. Zacchaeus actually climbed a tree, a grown-up climbing a tree. He climbed a sycamore tree along the route just to be able to catch a glimpse of Jesus. And that's when Jesus looked up at Zacchaeus perched on that branch overhead and spoke to that stranger. "Don't stay up there too long," Jesus said. "Let's get together at your house in a little while." About 2 weeks ago, I saw two plays that both lifted up the power of simply trying to make connections with other people. Rocky River High School's charming production of a play called Almost Maine depicted the residents of a small, isolated town in the state of Maine, a town called, you guessed it, Almost. Now, like in most small towns, there were no strangers there. Everybody knew everybody, except sometimes they didn't really know one another until they risked reaching out in friendship. Those small but courageous efforts helped to spread goodwill and peace on earth, at least peace in tiny, isolated, Almost Maine. The other play that lifted up the power of simply trying to make connections with other people, that was that Tony Award-winning Broadway musical called The Band's Visit. Based on an actual event, The Band's Visit tells about an Egyptian military band on a goodwill tour to a small village in Israel. The problem was that the Arabic-speaking Egyptians in this small military band, they misunderstood the Hebrew-speaking ticket agent, and they ended up taking the wrong bus and winding up in the wrong village. The Egyptian contingent had no choice but to spend the night in an Israeli village that wasn't prepared to host them because they certainly hadn't been expecting them. Using broken English as their common tongue, the play reveals how barriers fell and relationships formed as these Egyptian and Israeli strangers strove to reach out to one another. As they talked, as they walked together, as they shared food, as they raised a glass, they began to realize those life experiences that were common to them. And those life experiences that were common to them served to transform the uneasiness of being with strangers into a respectful, appreciative friendship. As Jesus broke down barriers by getting to know Zacchaeus, following the way of Jesus is our best chance of learning how to build and spread peace on earth, goodwill to all. I said I had two ideas. The other path for following the way of Jesus, another path, would be by choosing not to condemn. You might know the story in the 8th chapter of John's Gospel about a time when Jesus was teaching in the temple, when members of the temple's teaching faculty and some synagogue leaders, they interrupted him. They dragged a woman right in front of him and right in front of the crowd gathered all around him. "She's been caught in the act of adultery," they announced to the crowd. "Our religious law is clear. She is to be stoned to death." And then turning to Jesus, they asked, "Teacher, do you have anything to say?" And his response, "Whoever has committed no sin may throw the first stone." And at this, the leaders one by one slowly walked away until all of her accusers were gone. And Jesus assured the woman that he didn't condemn her because of what she had done. "Go," he told her, "but do not sin again." Jesus was aware that she'd made a mistake that hurt her family, hurt others. But Jesus didn't condemn her. He didn't pile on with the accusers. He didn't badmouth her. Think how many times we have the opportunity to pile on those who are vulnerable. In the break room, in the hallway, on social media, during coffee hour after church. But to advance God's desire for peace on earth, goodwill to all, we could also choose to follow the way of Jesus and show mercy and show patience rather than piling on with judgment and condemnation. "It Came Upon the Midnight Clear," Charming Carol, paints a vivid mental picture of God's angelic messengers announcing never before imagined good news. That in the birth of Jesus the Son, God was choosing to bend near the earth, eliminating that distance between God and humanity. See Jesus. Learn from him. Learn from his way so that you can choose in your life to act in ways that contribute to bringing peace on earth, goodwill to all.